You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
You may be sitting on an Eames chair as you listen to this show, but how much do you know about the lives of the couple who designed it? A fascinating new documentary called Eames, The Architect and the Painter, looks at the extraordinary partnership of Charles and Ray Eames, the husband and wife team who not only created some of the most influential furniture of our time and then expanded their efforts into the realms of photography, film, and exhibit design. Film opens today at the IFC Center, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Bill Jersey, who co-directed the film with Jason Cohn, to our show today. Hello.
Hello, thanks.
Is this the first documentary made about the lives of Charles and Ray Eames?
No, this is actually the second. Perry Mirabilladotto did a film in 1972 called Eames, A Celebration, which the sequence with Arlene Francis, incidentally, came from.
But we'll get to that Arlene Francis sequence later. So you were able to borrow certain things from the earlier film.
Of course.
Because
there's
just so much interesting archival material
here.
They died in 1978 and 1988, respectively.
Yeah, he died in 78, she died in 88.
And many people just assumed that Charles and Ray Eames were brothers.
Yes, they do, unfortunately. So,
well, Ray was Charles's wife. How did they meet?
Well, they met at Cranbrook. He was, you have to see the film, it was what I should say, right? I mean, if I tell you.
Well, now you got to tell some of the story, because if you just keep on saying, well, see my film, this conversation ends in about 10 seconds.
Well, but that's all right. As long as they go see my film, I don't care if they.
It's fascinating to watch whether we reveal everything.
He was married, and he had brought his wife and child up to St. Louis, and he went to Cranbrook.
That's in Michigan.
In Michigan. He lived in St. Louis and brought it up to Michigan. And he met there a young woman by the name of Ray Kaiser, and they fell in love.
Well, she had been a serious painter. She studied with Hans Hofmann.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. She had a serious background in painting. That's right.
So what was she doing at Cranbrook?
Cranbrook was the place to be in those days because it was so... what's the word? Polymathic. Anything that you wanted to study that had to do with art or design, or whether it's fabrics or whether it's painting, whether it was architecture, whether it was cinematography, whatever, it was all there. So it was the place to be.
But then they decided to move their operation to Venice, California. Was Venice the place to be at that time?
Yeah, it wasn't an operation at that point. It was just a marriage. It became an operation when they got to Venice, yes. And, I think modernism was emerging in California, and it was attracting a lot of young creative people.
Now, the subtitle of your film is The Architect and the Painter. We've established that Ray was a painter, but... Did Charles ever practice architecture?
He did. He did a few things, but he never got his license. So you can do that. You can practice architecture by getting a licensed architect to sign off on your work. So he didn't. But I think, to me, it's very important that the film is called Eames, the Architect and the Painter, not Eames, a Living Heritage or something like that, because Jason and I wanted to make this a story about a relationship between two people that made a difference in the world and how their lives impacted on one another, how their lives were impacted by culture, and of course how ultimately the interaction of him and his outside relationships influenced their relationship.
They built a house in Pacific Palisades. Did he design it?
It was part of, he designed it.
It's kind of a modernist house, not a typical modernist house.
Well, I'm sure he'd be happy to hear you say that if he were here, but everyone else around him would be happy to say. I think that it's atypical, it's unique, and it's new, unique in many ways. You really have to see the film to understand. No, I can't say that, can I?
No.
But you do have to, because it's not that simple. It was done as one of these study houses, which Eames and Saarinen and others did a number of houses in that area to see if they could design an economical house that could be reproduced.
But then Ray who decided to also warm the whole thing up so it didn't look so modern?
I think it wasn't so it didn't look so modern. It's just who she was. You know, there was people ask someone in the film, in one of the films asked Charles why he went from designing chairs to films. And he looked at them and sort of was a, he said, no, he said, that's a dumb question. In other words, those people did not sit down and sort of decide like in a cognitive interaction. They just felt they wanted to do something, and they did it.
Well, in the 30s, we had a number of people who were designing locomotives and dinnerware and silverware and houses and chairs and everything.
Right.
So they were coming out of another kind of tradition, weren't they?
Well, yes, that's the Cranbrook tradition. Which is, you know, that all, or as Charles would say, everything belongs. These are not, you don't isolate chairs from exhibits, from films.
But what did she want? Was her goal to be a fine artist, or did she want to be a designer at that point?
You know, in all the research we did, and mainly Jason, who did 4 years of research, and if you really want to know about it, you know, contact Bread and Butter Films, and Jason will give you some of his five years research. Or see the movie. But I think we're not sure about what she wanted to do. What clearly she wanted to do is express herself creatively, and she did. But she never went back to painting, even though she was invited to go back to painting when Charles died, and by a friend who said, you know, let's give up this business, which is not really your kind of, your cup of tea, and go paint. She said, no, that's in the past.
Well, he brought the practical end to the business, and she brought the aesthetics.
Yeah.
He had already designed a first version of his famous chair with his friend Eero Saarinen, not a bad architect in his own right.
I'll say.
It won a competition at MoMA, but then they couldn't manufacture it. They had real problems
Yes,
putting it together.
Well, you know, plywood was the great new medium to work with. And they thought they could just bend the plywood in two directions at once. And that would allow them to do this particular kind of chair that they designed. It turned out that they designed the chair without realizing what would be what was required to manufacture it. So they couldn't manufacture a chair that bent in two directions. So they had to actually invent a machine to bend plywood in two directions, which they did.
But they did it actually to design splints for wounded soldiers
during
World War II.
That's right. There wasn't, the first place, that this happened during World War II. They knew they had the capacity to bend plywood. What they couldn't get is all the materials to produce chairs. And the Navy needed splints. The Navy, I don't know why the Navy, it was the Navy, but they did. I would have thought it would be the Army or the Marines, but
the Navy is the only one that was willing to give them the commission.
That's possible.
And it worked out fine for them.
That's possible.
But then once they figured it out and they designed the chair, that they had to find a manufacturer for it.
Yes.
And was that Herman Miller?
That was Herman Miller.
Who still is manufacturing Eames chairs.
Who still is manufacturing. And the show we're going to have tonight is going to have a party after it, funded by by Herman Miller at Design Within Reach. So if you have nothing to do tonight, go to it's a closed party. I'm sorry, stop me.
Go see the film.
You've
suggested more than once. Was the chair popular from the start?
Oh yeah, and it was inexpensive from the start. I mean, it was $25. Even then, that wasn't that much money. Yes, it was very popular.
Their motto was the best for the most for the least.
Exactly.
So who did they see as their audience? Was it important for them to make good design affordable and available to the masses?
Yes, it was important to them. And I think that was important to the whole modernist movement, was a design movement. It just wasn't an arty movement. It was really a design movement. It was solving problems to make things inexpensive and available.
How many different versions of the chairs did they create?
You know, I don't know how many. All I know is in 1956 they developed something called the Eames Lounger, which I was a proud owner of before I even knew who Charles or Ree Eames were. It's a great chair.
That's the big cushy one.
That's the big cushy
one. That supposedly every psychotherapist in America bought.
Yes, indeed.
But what about the other ones? I have a feeling there are a lot of knockoffs, because I've seen a lot of chairs that look like Eames chairs sold at inexpensive stores.
Yes, you have, and I don't know how to protect people against doing that, but they will.
Many reviewers have suggested parallels with Steve Jobs. Do you see that?
Yes, I do. Although you're being generous to the many reviewers, it was only actually A.O. Scott in the New York Times this morning that made that parallel, and I think is a very important one. Because both of these guys...
He's the only one I read, but I assumed others...
No, others were not as smart. The New York Times beats them all.
But in some ways, it's because Jobs got credit for everything that came out of Apple.
That's part of it.
And Charles got credit for everything that came out of the studio, even though they had a number of really wonderful designers. Harris and Ray got lost in the mix. Yeah.
But as Saul Werman said, it was Charles who put his name on it. I mean, I'm sure Michelangelo had quite a few people painting that stuff, but Michelangelo got the credit, and Jobs gets the credit, and Eames gets the credit.
On the other hand, Michelangelo came up with the idea. In this case, it looks like it was a collaboration, and she still got short shrift.
It was more of a collaboration, but remember, this was not the time of women's liberation. This was the time of women standing behind their men.
Well, you co-directed this film with Jason Cohn.
I did.
If I didn't mention that, he probably would get a little upset.
Should, because it was his idea.
The film is called Eames, the Architect and the Painter, and it opens today at the IFC Center. You mentioned a scene scene from a TV interview that they did with Arlene Francis,
right,
in which she's clearly uncomfortable,
right,
with the idea of Charles and Ray as partners. Arlene Francis is.
Right.
And she kind of describes Ray as the little woman.
Yes, yes. She's only behind the man, but it's an important part, she said.
So that must have upset Ray.
Well, of course, as many things upset Ray, as in the film, of course, one woman talks about how devastated Ray was to find out that Charles was involved with another lady. Outside of the office, incidentally. As far as we know, that never happened within the office. It was only outside the office. He tried to keep those worlds separate.
He was a good-looking man and had a certain, although he seemed also nerdy on some levels, he had a lot of charisma.
He did. He did.
So how did they go from furniture to films? The link doesn't seem immediately obvious. Did they both have an interest in photography?
Yes, they did. They did. And Charles actually worked for a little while as an art director in Hollywood because he couldn't find any work as an architect when they were in Los Angeles. So he worked as an art director in Hollywood. He actually, there's a shot in the film of him with a small Cine Kodak camera taking pictures at Cranbrook. So he was involved at Cranbrook. He did a little film at Cranbrook.
They created a propaganda film about American life to be shown in the Soviet Union. It was part of the whole confrontation between Nikita Khrushchev and Richard Nixon, the kitchen debate.
Yes, yes. Well, I don't know if it was part of it, but it was part of that scene, yes. And they were asked to do a show on on America because the Soviet Union was showing its best side. America was going to show its best side. And that's one of the best sequences in the film for me in terms of discovering how Charles worked, because he thought through exactly how to do it. He says, for instance, if I showed them one great freeway, they would say, well, we got one at Minsk and we got one at Smolensk. So we show them 20 freeways, or 120 freeways it was actually, in like 20 seconds. So his philosophy is very well expressed in that.
He also, before computer graphics, was doing all sorts, yes, of interesting special effects. Yes. Probably the most famous film is Powers of Ten, in which the camera zooms out from a scene of a picnic to 100 million light years away and then back down to a single atom.
Yes.
Very clever. Was that a groundbreaking idea at the time?
Well, I suspect it was, though I don't remember in particular. I was not paying attention to the Eameses at that point in my life. But I'm sure it was groundbreaking, and it certainly is amazing that it still works if you show it in classrooms.
And then that was part of the work they did for IBM. They also designed the IBM Pavilion for the 1964 World's Fair.
Yes.
What did they do in that exhibit?
Well, one of the things they did is they decided, now not they, in this case it was Charles, because this was an engineering event, he decided that the audience would be lifted up, the whole 400-people audience would be lifted up in the air. So, of course, his associates were saying, well, Charles, that's okay for you to do that, but look at what the engineering is about, what it's going to cost. And he said, did you ask if anybody that was okay? He said, no, and if you don't ask, it means you can do it.
By the way, we have links on our website to information about of the film that we're discussing. Also, we can lead you to a site where you can see the Eames film, Powers of Ten.
Is this the Eames office link?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Charles died on August 21st, 1978. Ray died on the same day exactly 10 years later.
Right, right. And waited to die, really. The story is told so beautifully that a friend of hers came in to see her, and she said, what day is it? She said, it's Thursday. Oh. Then she came in the next day. What day is it? Friday. And then she came in the next day, and it was the day of his death, and that day she died. So it's pretty touching. There are a number of things that emotionally I think are very appealing.
A listener, Philip in Newark, asks about Charles's concept of the new covetables, the idea that we'll all covet things that are endlessly renewable.
Yes.
So you see anything similar in today's design movement?
Sure, of course. I mean, the new covetables are the iPad, a more improved smartphone, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure one day we'll have something we stick in our ear and we don't even have to see it. It'll push brain waves. So, I mean, I don't know. But, yeah, I think the new covetable is the technology.
When the Eameses were doing all of these films and other things, displays, and working for Westinghouse, Boeing, Alcoa, Polaroid, kind of in the advertising business as much as anything.
Paying the rent.
Were they also designing furniture still?
They would go back and forth designing furniture, Herman Miller. I don't know how many times they went back, but I do know they did go back. Herman Miller was their money pot. They invested, frequently over-invested in the exhibits where they would get a contract for $150,000 from IBM for Mathematica, and they would spend $300,000 doing it. Because once Charles wanted to do it, he wanted to do it. And while he like the rest of us, wants to make a living at doing it, the quality of his work was always more important than the quantity of his income.
Well, right now, I think Herman Miller is still making a living from all
of
this.
I hope so.
The film Eames, the Architect and the Painter, opens today at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue, and I'm very pleased that Bill Jersey, co-director of the film with Jason Cohn, could visit us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.